everyone, and welcome to episode 96 of the Medieval Podcast. I'm Danielle Cebulski, also known as the 5-Minute Medievalist. It's a truth universally acknowledged that when disaster strikes, good people will come together to create good things. In the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, people all over the world are having to come up with new ways to teach and to learn in virtual environments, but it can be very hard to find resources while still trying to run your own circus at home. Fortunately for us, a team of superheroes has assembled in Medieval Studies to have your back when you need it most. Introducing the Middle Ages for Educators. This week, I spoke with the creators of the amazing website that is the Middle Ages for Educators, Dr. Merle Eisenberg, Dr. Sarah McDougall, and Dr. Laura Moriale. Their labor of love pulls together content by the world's experts in medieval studies, so that whatever you may need, from videos to primary sources, from the Black Death to gender studies, is all in one place. Here's our conversation on how the Middle Ages for Educators came about, what you can find there for your classroom or your own research, and how you can contribute. Well, hi, everybody, and thank you for coming on the podcast to talk to us about Middle Ages for Educators. This is a really exciting resource, and I'm so happy to have you here to talk about it.
Thank you. We're so pleased to be here.
Thank you so much, Danielle.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
You're welcome. Can I just get you to introduce yourself so people know whose voice is whose as we go on? So let's start with you, Sarah, because you're the first person I see on my screen. Sarah, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Sarah McDougall. I teach medieval history at John Jay College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York.
Go for it, Merle.
I'm Merle Eisenberg. I'm a postdoctoral fellow at what's called the National Socio-Environmental Synthesis Center, which is a nice mouthful. It's SSINC for short, which is located in Annapolis, Maryland. It's part of the University of Maryland College Park. And my own research interests are on plagues and pandemics. And
oh, that's super relevant and awesome. All right. And then we have Laura.
Hi, I'm Laura Moriale. I'm an independent scholar. I live and work here in Washington, D.C. I'm trained mostly as an Italianist, but I do a little bit of work with the Crusades and with French writing outside of France. So I'm happy to be
here. And so you have all come together like the Avengers to create something awesome for educators. Here we are. Everybody is at home. Everybody's trying to find different ways to teach things. So tell us a little bit about the Middle Ages for Educators. What is it to begin with?
Sarah, do you want to start with that?
What is it? Well, it's almost easier to start with how it got this. So what it is our response to the exact problem that you described. Pandemic hit, libraries closed. Classes suddenly moved online, and we were watching our friends panic, both friends, you know, who had to teach and friends who had kids who had to learn. And we were looking at this total freak out. Basically, it's hard to remember when we had the energy to be that excited about anything before the enormous amount of fatigue set in. But we realized that there was a need for one place where people could go to get curated materials to learn or teach about the Middle Ages. And so we got together virtually, of course, to try to figure out how to make that happen. We talked for a while about what best to put where. And I'm not answering your question, though, of what it is. Laura. I bet Laura can answer what it is.
Sure. Yeah. So Middle Ages for Educators, and I will add on to this sort of origin story to say that it sort of started on Twitter, which is how many things start these days. And we just had a Twitter conversation about how we might respond to this situation. And so we created this site that brings together not only things that we know exist already on the web, so other websites and projects that people have brought together, but also we reached out to our colleagues and asked if people would create small videos that were really just, you know, small lessons with lessons plans and links and primary sources and all of that stuff that could be inserted quite easily into a classroom setting. And so in lieu of having to create something about the plague or about the Crusades or about any of the other things that these small videos are on, you could just use that video as a starting point for conversations that would go on in your class, right? And so thinking specifically about the digital classroom and how our resources might fit within that new paradigm.
Right. So, Merle, what did you want to add to that?
No, I was just going to add that teaching online, I think for many people, what we've discovered during COVID is how much harder it is and how much more time it takes and how many more time zones you actually have to do things in. So this was our way of addressing that, right? That we could give people packaged ideas, packaged videos, packaged lesson plans that were becoming exceedingly popular, right? I mean, I think if you didn't have a lesson plan on the Black Death as part of your medieval topic, I think everyone built one in. So what we do is we give you, for example, that exact thing where we have an expert discuss the basics of what is the bacterium, how does it spread, right? These very nuanced topics, and then you can use that as your jumping off
point. Right. Okay. So we have all these resources. And as it says in the title of your website is that it's for educators. So who is it aimed at? When we're talking about educators, who are we talking about?
So we chose the title, well, after much agonizing, because I have a terrible sense of humor problem. And I think I had, what was it? Get Medieval. I was insisting Get Medieval had to be in the title somewhere. Get Medieval Stuff, I think, was my most brilliant suggestion.
It's really tempting in our field, you have to admit, really.
Right. So thank you. Thank you for enabling me. So, you know, we didn't want it to be a professor only. We wanted to be as inclusive as possible for anyone who wanted to learn stuff about the Middle Ages or to help teach about the Middle Ages. And so we chose education as kind of the broadest umbrella for that, with something of a focus on making sure that the people who were trying to run classrooms got priority because we were most worried about them. But certainly we didn't want any curious other human out there to think this is not for you. I mean, if anyone out there wants to learn about the Middle Ages, come learn, was what we were trying to suggest.
Yeah, I think you can imagine a world in which you have both people taking courses and people doing research, right? Which is two different groups of people. And obviously education covers both. And then you can probably think about four different groups, perhaps, and there's more that are using the website. So one are professors using the prepackaged videos or resources. One are the grad students who need to find online resources suddenly in a hurry. You know, I haven't been in a library since February, right? So it's almost a year now. And that's probably the case for many people. So to give them resources of online open access books, for example. You could also think of undergraduates who, some similarly, but with a different type of content, probably need resources that are online, maybe translations. That's a big thing we've put a lot of time into, translations into English that you can find freely available. And then you also might think of a world of, say, middle school and high school education that can start to use these modules and these resources as well. And this is something that the website is also expanding into in the near future.
And I will say, too, just in terms of, you know, the background story, the project in itself has brought educators together and given educators a sense of community in a time when we all felt really far from each other. Right. So reaching out to friends and saying, hey, would you make this video, and then putting it up, and then having other friends say, oh, it's my friend. She's on. She's doing her thing. She's looking so well. Right. We were all sort of anxious about what was happening during that time. And so not only is a service for people who want to learn, but it's also a service for educators who felt they needed to connect with them.
I love that, actually, because you have a whole list of people who are contributors, or are there people who are just human resources for educators and stuff like that. And looking down that list, I'm going, oh, that person's great, or I love that person, or I love their work. And it's just, yeah, it's actually, I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but it is very much a community sense. So you have all these educators on the website. What are some of the challenges that they're facing that you're trying to mitigate? So you've gotten at some of them, like it's sometimes hard to find resources and things like that. But if we drill down a little bit further, so there are people that are doing general courses about the Middle Ages, middle school, high school, undergraduate. So how are you helping them? Like, how is this a resource for them?
Well, the idea is that they could hopefully use the tool window, the search function, to find whatever kind of digital resource might be most useful for them, whether it's a list of primary sources in translation or a bunch of overviews. Or if, I mean, your example was teaching a general history, right? They would find some of the lists of recordings of online classes that other people have done And they can also use the list of experts to find someone whose expertise in that given subject is just what they need. And they have the contact information for that person. So they can either email them and say, help me, or they can email them and say, hey, would you like to guest lecture in my class tomorrow? We're not recommending that. We're going to lose all our experts from the list.
Yeah, the experts are having a small heart attack as they hear you say that.
Everyone is free to teach tomorrow. Call them all now.
Yeah, I think the other thing is that there's a lot of wonderful work that people have done and they build into their classes wherever they might be. That really, I think once we started sharing this publicly, people were really, really excited and have started building it into their courses. So there's an example that a number of professors have used of a trans woman in the Middle Ages, right? This is a topic on gender and sexuality that's obviously of quite a bit of interest. And so I didn't know about this, but I know now that it's on the website, people have built this into their course moving forward. And the other thing we're starting to do as well to adapt, you know, not just us badgering our friends to give us videos or our colleagues, is to build in what we're calling debates, so that these are big topics that kind of every course has to follow, right? So does Rome fall? What are the Islamic conquests, right? These like big picture questions that I think we all teach to some level or another. And so to build those resources to see how some of the experts and the really innovative teachers in the field are teaching these big, broad question topics.
So you're finding that the scholars in medieval studies are being pretty generous with their materials? Because it looks like it to me.
Absolutely. I would never have imagined the kind of response that we have gotten. And it's really just so heartwarming. And, you know, I think it speaks to the kind of field that we are, right? We're a field that's full of, you know, different subfields. And there's a moment then we feel that we can cross over and share what we have. That's a great moment. And I think Merle previously made this wonderful point about how medieval studies previously has been kind of difficult to get into because it requires so many specialties. And when we were able to tap into experts and say, listen, can you just talk about your area of expertise? That opens that up and it democratizes it in a way that is really great for the field, I think.
Yeah, I think that's so true, because in this particular field, we're looking at 1,000 years or more. We're looking at least one continent and hopefully more. And so you can't possibly be a specialist on everything. So what are some of the specialties that you have, some of the specialists maybe that you have that are offering their work or their help on the website?
So many, where to start? We've been pretty good at getting people in all kinds of different positions and people who are working all over the world who have work to contribute, and we've been trying to track them down. So let's see, we've talked about the plague already, we've talked about gender and sexuality already. Certainly there's a whole bunch of people who work on mapping. There's been some stuff on late antiquity. There's also been a really neat set of videos on medievalism. So modern meeting medieval, with some really, really interesting discussions of how to do that in the classroom and what might be useful for that kind of work. And as we said, the new expertise that we're trying to tap into is school teachers. So people who know about the curriculum in the middle schools and high schools and what those specific needs are and what kinds of things we need to develop for them. But I'm leaving out so much. I mean, we also, you know, there's people who work on music. There's people who work on art history. We're trying to go as big as possible just to really push this democratization of access to all of the amazing stuff and also the amazing digital know-how. Because it turns out, and Laura is a better preacher on the gospel of this than I am, but it turns out that medievalists, a lot of medievalists, actually have incredible expertise in how to do digital. And so it's also learning how to do that, how to do podcasts, for example.
Good example.
Turns out medievalists can learn how to do and do well and teach others how to do, or how to do a digital art exhibit, which anybody wants to do in their own, you know, free time.
Yeah, and this the digital aspect was part of a series that was begun in conjunction with the Medieval Academy of America. And so we initially called these things tool talks, which in fact helped educators and students, of course, too, learn how to express themselves digitally, which is an important thing obviously now, and I think will be going forward, right? We can't all assume that, you know, we're all going to write an essay, print it out on a printer, and then, you know, give it to our professors. That's, I think, not how we're going to be learning and expressing ourselves in this knowledge economy going forward. And so we really wanted to not only present the websites that have to do with medieval studies or small videos that speak to a specific subject, but we also wanted to talk about how can we use the digital medium to teach and to learn. So those videos are there on the site as well.
Awesome. Merle, you were taking notes. Do you have things that you want to throw in there?
He's grading us is what he's. We're never going to be invited on Merle's podcast. That's what I'm fearing right now.
Well, you don't quite work on diseases in history, so that might be the reason. But no, I think Laura and Sarah have touched upon many of the points. I'll just say that we take a very expansive view, right? So it's late antiquity and the Middle Ages. So it's 300 and we can go earlier than that. It's not a hard and fast line up to 1500, 1600 and really across Eurasia and Africa as well. And that's something that we're very keen on and in different fields as well, whether it be literature, art, or history.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think that increasingly the people who are teaching the Middle Ages are starting to take a global perspective, which is just awesome. But it's a place where when you get to be more of a specialist, there are things that always drop off. And for many of us who are kind of trained in the old school, it's a global perspective. So I think it's great that you're having these resources that kind of open this up for people to learn about things that they don't actually know about already. One of the things that I've noticed about your website as well is that you really have a focus on accessibility. So how are some of the ways that you're making this easy for educators to access the content?
Well, certainly all the videos have transcripts. When we moved over to Princeton, we had initially started this project, you
all
know,
ourselves.
from my couch, if you will, right?
with some support from the Haskins.
So. Yes, from the support from the Haskins Society, of course. We then eventually moved it over to Princeton, at which point a lot of the accessibility initiatives were sort of stepped up. So we have transcripts for every video and all the images have captions, things like that. Am I missing anything else?
No, it's been really wonderful to work with the website and technology people at Princeton because all of that is built in to their features. And so in order for it to go on the website, it has to have all the accessibility features built in, which is a really wonderful part of the website as a whole.
Right. They automatically knew, you know, which colors could and couldn't work for certain challenges. And just they trained us in all of the things that needed to be done. And then to go beyond, I mean, to accessibility in terms of, say, I don't know anything about art history and I need to find images. What we tried to do was to make things findable through a bunch of different categories. And so you could choose the resources and then pick the topic that interests you, or you could pick the medium that interests you, or you just type into the search window images. And so we tried to make it possible that no matter which way you went into the site, you could get at either the database that you needed or the podcast that you needed or the expert that you needed to find whatever it was, even if you weren't entirely clear what it was that you needed to find. I mean, we also, you know, we have some suggestions. Here's some fun stuff on the website that you might need.
Yeah, I think that's important because often academic searches can be really dumb. And I think that, you know, as people who are experts in certain areas, you can find all the different terms that you've used in your own searches that have finally gotten you the results that you want. And you can build that into the website, which is good. So you have a search function, which is helpful to people. And they can find, as you're saying, images. That's not something that I had brought up because we had been mostly focusing on videos. But what kind of an image library do you have for people?
So there's links to all of the various museums and a bunch of the different databases that are out there. So all of the guides to different medieval churches, and then just some of the standard, the websites that art historians know the names of that other people don't know the names of. I mean, we just tried to pull together all of the knowledge that's spread out over all of these places so that people were in a better position than they are when they just go on Google and have to go based on their own sense, or as you said, their own idea of what a useful search term might be. We tried to use tagging so that we could help them find the words that would lead them to what they needed. So we have guides to coins also that are linked. There's so much, it's almost intimidating to try to describe.
That really is the case, right? That, you know, say 20 years ago, there wasn't all the richness of medieval studies that there is on the web now. And so our job was less to create a data bank of images, because many people have done it already, but rather to lead people towards those great resources that are there and give people a sense that we're three medievalists. This is going to be a site that's going to work for you, right? Not some sort of random Pinterest site. Not that Pinterest is bad, but nonetheless, you know, these are things that you can have a certain amount of confidence in, that you can use in your class or you can use in your project for a particular class, right? And so we've done that work for you to kind of sift through the things that, you know, medievalists use and rely upon.
Yeah, that's really important, because the Pinterest thing that you're mentioning, again, nothing wrong with Pinterest in general, but when you're looking for an image for medieval studies, I think we have all fallen down the Pinterest rabbit hole where you're like, I need to find the attribution for this, and all I can find is Pinterest. So it's good that you have a better map towards those image resources.
Right. It actually takes you back to the place, you know, in the library that it comes from, so that you can actually cite it or make it bigger or do whatever you need to do with it.
And for the people who are going to send me a message saying, you can just put like minus Pinterest on your Google search, I know that. But I really do appreciate that you have this all brought together.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, of course, the quality of the image, right? I mean, I've given enough talks or taught enough times and used an image that I randomly found, and then when it blows up on a giant projector, it doesn't exactly look great. And so you get some more quality control, and I think that's an important thing too, of course.
Yes, that can't be discounted. Okay, so maybe more of a fun question. So you've had this up, I remember when this was a baby website in like April, May, right? And now it's grown, it's so mature. What has been some of the most popular content that you have on the website? What have people been accessing the most? I'm going to take a wild guess and imagine that the plague is going to be up there, but what are some of the other things people have accessed that have been popular?
So Dan Smale at Harvard made a beautiful video for us, which luckily I only watched after I had made my video, or I never would have made my video. It does involve plague, but it is so much more than that. Not to diminish the importance of plague, sorry, Merle, or anyone else who might be offended. But it's just this incredibly rich story of a woman who's trying to deal with the loss of property after her family's died in the plague. And it gets into all of these broader issues in a way that is incredibly rich for almost any kind of social history or legal history or gender topic that you might be thinking of. So that one was one of our biggest hits early on. I don't know. Laura is, I think, our resident analytics expert.
Well, I've lost track of the analytics, but certainly Sita Chaganti's contribution on the Danse Macabre has been extraordinarily popular. It's a wonderful walking through and thinking about, you know, the intersection of text and art and movement, and bringing students into that sense of space that we don't always think about. So much of what we do is flattened into that textual space. And so I think Professor Giganti has done a wonderful job about sort of waking us up to those realities. And then I'll suggest another one that I think people haven't paid a lot of attention to, but it's just great. And that's a video by Carl Steele. And it's just a really charming story about a swallow and about animals. And so I would encourage people to go check that one out. It's really a lot of fun, and he does a lovely job on that one. Merle, do you have any things that you would want to promote or your favorites? Aside from your own, of course.
No, I think I'm in the same spot where if I had to do my video over again, I would definitely do it over again, and maybe I will someday. I recorded it in the days of, you know, end of March, when I don't think I even knew how to share a screen on Zoom, which is now kind of funny to think about, but at the time I didn't. So I like the content of my video, but not the video itself. We'll leave it at that. No, but another video that's actually been popular, I think is well done, is Women of 1000 AD has been something that a number of people have reached out to us. This is different stories of women around, you know, the global Middle Ages and their stories around the year 1000. And that's been something I think a number of people have reached out to us and said they've really, really enjoyed. So that's something I would flag.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine it's the stuff on the outside of what has been canon for so long that is going to really be popular. Sarah, what did you want to say?
Oh, I kept thinking of all of the other people who've written to think, you know, to say this is great and this is great. I mean, it's also just been, so the videos, which was Laura's idea, I would like to point out, the videos have been some of the most exciting things for us and for us to see people think about and use, not least for the reason Laura said, is just because it's such an expression of generosity for people to be willing to make this video and share this video with their colleagues, but also all of the resources for research and for just thinking about the Middle Ages. There's the videos, but there's also all of the attached. Here's the primary source I'm talking about. Here's the secondary sources I'm talking about. I mean, I'm teaching Kathy Krause's video on Marie de France in a couple of weeks. And not only is her video great, but here are all of the additions that people who actually know things about this subject think are the additions that you should use. And here's the links to them. And here's a link to the manuscript. And here's a link to these other images. And you may think that this more recent thing is good, but really you might want to look here instead. I mean, it's just a level of expertise that is so reassuring and helpful. And then also just all of these different primary source repositories that are all over the place on the internet that no one knows about, that I keep ending up sending people to. So when I'm advising grad students and things like that, I end up sending them to the website because I'm too lazy to actually remember where they're originally from. But it's the pleasure of having it there curated for you, that somebody who knows something on the subject says, this one is good. This one will work for you.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize what Sarah just said, and I'll give one example. In my graduate training, one of the courses I was fortunate to take was a course that focused a lot on instrumenta, right? That's like, how do you find stuff when you have something or you want to know something? And so what I managed to do was, this was obviously an in-person class a number of years ago, was to take all of those websites and all of those places and put them together on our website. So now everyone can know about them and use them. So if our listeners are really interested in the Byzantine world, in Greek manuscripts, right? Greek manuscripts have the feature that there's one website in French called Panakes that you can look up every manuscript and the contents down to the what's on the recto and what's on the verso of individual pages. And so having that website, learning how to use that website is a really powerful tool. And so one thing we've done is collect all of that together so that we present that to people and more people know about such an important website as that.
Exactly. I don't think it's necessarily laziness, Sarah, is there's just so much out there. And it's also wonderful. Like we've mentioned a few times, the generosity of our colleagues. And I don't know if it's the same in every field, but the people in medieval studies, they just want to give and give and give. And it's just an amazing thing. So, okay, how can people in medieval studies contribute to this? How can they participate? Because I know there are going to be people listening to this being like, I have stuff and I want to share it. And I didn't know how to share it before. So how can other people in medieval studies contribute to your project?
We have a contact form on the site. So please go there and fill that out. Are our emails on there? I think so. You can sort of contact us directly. When I talk to people or communicate with people about what a video might look like or what a contribution might look like, the first thing I say is, listen, this doesn't have to be a big deal. The first idea was, listen, there's a source that you know back and forth. That's your source, right? Give us 5 to 15 minutes on that and make it something easy that you can do in an hour, right? Start to finish. And the truth of the matter is, you know, that those sorts of that level of expertise and that level of comfort with a particular source comes across in the video, right? It's almost like a friend. It's a person that's been with you and traveled along with you in your work. And so capturing those moments and capturing that kind of relationship with a source is wonderful. And I think it really comes across in those videos. So those, you know, don't, if you want to contribute, and we would absolutely love that you would, make it something that's comfortable and easy for you, because that's what I think is well received.
And you don't have to make a video also. You can also just join our list of experts explaining what kinds of things you feel comfortable helping other people with and what kinds of resources you have on offer to share. If you send us that information, we will add you to our list very happily.
Yeah, I think since we've migrated the site to Princeton website, we've had at least 10 or 15 people in the last few weeks reach out to us, ask to contribute something. And, you know, we've reached back out to them and some of those contributions are forthcoming. And so these are things and these are people we didn't know before this project, right? So we tapped our networks and harassed our friends, as it were, at first. Obviously, that's how these things work. But there's so many more people out there that we don't know and have started reaching out to us because they've either used the website or heard about the website. So we'd encourage your listeners to check it out. And if there are things that you're thinking of contributing, feel free to reach out and contact us. And we tend to respond, I think, pretty
quickly. Well, hopefully you will have lots of responses after having this podcast out here. But I know that what you're saying is that the next frontier for you is educators that are maybe below the university level, so middle school, high school. What kind of resources do you think that they'll need? What kind of information do you need from educators, for example, that will help you make this better? Tell us what you need.
So
everybody has an answer. Okay, go.
We're so excited about this. We've been talking to people who are part of a teaching program in New Jersey, and we've been working with a couple of curriculums in some other states. Like I was just reading, as one does, the social studies curriculum for Texas. And there's actually a lot of commonalities, and a lot of it is amusingly stuff that Merle was telling us all along that we needed on the website. And we were just kind of either we didn't move as quickly as Merle recommended, but we're working on it. There's a big interest in being able to teach about things like the fall of Rome, the feudal organization of... Everyone's laughing at me because here I'm torn between the use of fiefs in medieval society and how we should talk about them. Serfdom, obviously, there's a huge interest in legal stuff, particularly Magna Carta, but other kinds of English constitutional history and how that influenced U.S. history. We have not yet been digging into the Canadian curriculum much, but it might be a lot of the same concerns. We're looking to a lot of the amazing stuff that they do in the UK already. I mean, a lot of the other big topics, context with the Mongols.
Yeah, Silk Road.
Silk Road, for sure. I mean, there's already so much fabulous stuff on the Silk Road, but there's definitely room for more.
And of course, Crusades.
Crusades.
Always Crusades.
Yeah, I had an interaction with Crusade scholars early on saying, you know, what would be the big question for you and how would you, you know, and I said, you can't say, what is the thing we studied called? And they said, no, that is the question. That is the entire question of the field. So there are lots of different topics that need to be covered, but also in terms of formats, which I thought was really interesting in terms of K through 12 stuff, right, is that obviously translated primary sources are really important for middle and high schoolers, but also comparing different sources, right? Having things side by side. Those are the kinds of approaches that folks take in, you know, younger years, but also graphs and charts, things that have been somewhat digested for that demographic. Those things are good. And those help educators go from, I have an idea about having to teach about the Crusades, and then I have the material to do that. So I think topics and formats go hand in hand.
Where we need help and where we are in the process of seeking help is getting age-appropriate stuff because we are not experts in what is appropriate for an 8th grader, 9th grader, 10th grader, 11th grader, 12th grader. We need people who can tell us these are the materials that are needed for this age level. And so that is something else we're working on.
The point that we learned from these meetings so far is to create a separate section, a separate label, a separate sorting mechanism of some of these age-appropriate materials, right? So what do the high school students need and how can they easily just click a drop-down menu and pull it up? So something much easier like that so that all of their content is in one place. And that's something that they thought would be very helpful and is something we're readjusting the site moving forward.
One of the things we keep coming back to is how expansive the field is just in general. And it may not comfort you to know that I'm from Ontario and we learn about the Middle Ages in grade 4, which I think is much younger than you do in many of the states that you're working towards here. And so that is a challenge for you as well, because there's a huge difference between grade 4 and grade 7, where I think a lot of people in the states are coming across the Middle Ages, and then, you know, again, grade 10 or university. So yeah, it's a big challenge. Sorry about that, but we do learn about it in grade 4, at least in Ontario. So that's another challenge, another level of challenge for you.
Room for growth.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing we all recognized was how little we knew about pre-college education and how much we had to redesign and just rethink so much of our assumptions and what we knew or didn't know. And so that was the first thing we really learned in that process.
Would it be helpful for educators to get in touch with you and contribute their resources? Or do you want to have a discussion with educators that are in the primary and high school grades? What would be helpful for you from educators themselves?
So we've been planning on putting together a survey for them and getting some kind of conversation. But yeah, I mean, we're eager to talk about how to make this stuff better. We're so grateful to school teachers that we are terrified of taking up any of their time. We want to help them not get in their way. And so we could respectfully ask. But yeah.
Yeah, I'll just say if people want to get in touch with us and give us ideas, whether they be, you know, meta level, here's how my place teaches it, or particulars that they think would help shape the website or content that they would like us to have, we're always more than eager to hear contributions. I mean, we're three people who came together to make this website, but we all have our own views and our own research interests and our own teaching interests. And so we've brought those to the website, but they don't cover everything. As you heard, we have our own fiefdoms, if you will, Sarah. And so those are some ways, as you can see, reflected in the site, right? Just like any teaching, whatever we do is reflected in our own interests. And so the more interests and the more ideas we gather, the broader it's going to be.
That is wonderful. And I think that's a good place to wrap it up, because I think that people listening are going to be so full of ideas and things that they want to contribute. This is probably a place where we need to stop, or you're going to be totally overwhelmed. But I just want to thank you so much. We're talking a lot about generosity today, and the generosity of spirit that the three of you have shown in creating this resource is just so commendable. So thank you so much for creating it. And thanks for sharing it with us on the podcast.
Thank you. And I think we do also have to thank our sponsors at Princeton.
Yeah, we just wanted to thank our sponsors, the Program in Medieval Studies and the Committee for the Study of Late Antiquity in particular, but also Princeton Classics, the Department of French and Italian, the German Department, the Seeger Center for Hellenic Studies, the Department of History, and particularly as well, the Humanities Council.
Yes, because no medievalist is an island. So thank you, Princeton, and all of the other people who have contributed. Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you. It was a real treat.
Thank you. It was great. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having us.
You can find the Middle Ages for Educators at middleagesforeducators.princeton.edu. And you can follow this amazing project on Twitter at @AgesEducators. You can also find our hardworking heroes individually on Twitter at Merle Eisenberg, at Sarah McDougall too, and at Laura Morreale. Before we go, here's Peter from medievalist.net to tell us what's on the website. What's new this week, Peter?
Hey. So this week we have the 9th and final article in a series by Bennett Alortz-Aleria, and he took a look at Scandinavia and how it kind of developed politically in the later Middle Ages. I really enjoyed it. It's been a really interesting kind of series. Look at all the different countries. And it kind of ends off with the Kalmar Union. So they kind of went Scandinavia was all united for a not too long period. So we have that to check out. Plus Lucy Lemonnier's latest piece on raising sheep in medieval France, which is really, again, fascinating stuff. And we also have pieces on Alcuin and Charlemagne. And we also have the Byzantium and Friends podcast, Byzantium in Video Games. So that was pretty cool to listen to as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Video games and sheep. I have to check out that article. I didn't know that was coming out. That's awesome.
That was really good. And I have a pile of articles sent by writers. So this week we're going to have like quite a lot of stuff to go out.
That's awesome. And we should probably also mention that this week coming out is The Dig on Netflix, right? Do you know anything about this film? What's this film about, Peter?
Hey, if you're interested in archaeology, medieval archaeology, this is the story of how the Sutton Hoo, famous early medieval English artifacts, were discovered. And it's kind of a semi-fictional tale, so they kind of amp up the drama. But if you ever gone to a British Museum and you've been looking at those artifacts and you want to know the story of how they came out of the ground, this is it. So,
yeah, I mean, it's rare that you ever get like archaeological digs dramatized, especially by like super famous actors. So this is our moment, medievalists.
Yes, I think this is probably like it's the Middle Ages are here.
Well, maybe it's a little bit more cheerful than many of the other things that you can get that are medieval movies. So I'm looking forward to watching this, and I guess I will probably get to it sometime this week. I don't know if it's going to be before or after this podcast episode gets out, but I'm definitely going to get to that.
Yeah, it's up on Netflix. So yeah, everyone check it out.
We will. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks.
Thank you to all of our patrons on patreon.com for keeping this podcast going each month. You're amazing and very appreciated. Patrons of the Medieval Podcast get access to awesome stuff like subscriptions to Medieval Warfare Magazine and the Medieval Magazine, membership in our book club, and maps made just for us by Tina Ross. In fact, we just got our latest map this week on medieval Greece, and it's awesome. To find out more about how to become a patron, please visit patreon.com/medievalists. For everything from archaeology to education, follow medievalist.net on Facebook or Twitter at medievalists. And you can find me, Danielle Sobalski, all over social media at 5minmedievalist or 5minutemedievalist. You can also find my books, including Life in Medieval Europe, Fact and Fiction, at your favorite online bookstores. Our music is Beyond the Warriors by Guy Frog. Thanks for listening, and have yourself an educational day.